Hello everybody out there, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and get more info on the podcast, including previous episodes and more content at dsmsports.net. Got a great episode for you guys today. Going to be delving into a subject that has come up indirectly on this podcast, but we've never had a guest on with a lot of expertise, and that is about venue and venue design, venue activation, venue technology, and how it's all evolving to keep up with the fan experience and all the different expectations of modern day fans. We're gonna be talking to Brian Marakian, director of Populous Activate and principal at Populous, which is an architecture and brand activation firm that works closely with a lot of sports and entertainment teams on their venue design and venue activation. But before we get to our conversation with Brian, we have this episode's helpful tool. This episode's helpful tool is, well, it's not the most exciting or sexy thing, in my opinion, but a lot of geeks, especially Mac user geeks, computer geeks, are really going bonkers for it. So I thought I'd make a great helpful tool for this episode, and that is Mac ID for iOS. And what is it? Well, if you have a Mac computer, if you're just a Mac user overall, it is a handy way to easily sync up and unlock your products from wherever you are. So if you are about to open up your computer, you can easily just use your touchscreen on your smart device, your phone or tablet, and unlock it through your phone, just through your thumbprint or through a password on there. You can also do this remotely, so if you're in a hurry or if you're trying to unlock your computer for someone at the office and you're not there, you can easily do that from your smart device. So a pretty cool little tool. It's free, which is even better, and it's obviously for iOS users, and it can come in handy. So take a look at it. See what you can do with it. See if it gets you excited like all the other geeks out there. And thank us for it later. All right. That's this episode's helpful tool, available in the App Store for free. It's Mac ID for iOS. All right. We will be right back to have a fantastic conversation that you're going to get a lot out of with Brian Marakian, director of Populous Activate, and principal at Populous. Coming right up. Alright, that was this episode's helpful tool. It's called Mac ID for iOS, a neat little way to sync up your computer with your mobile device and sign in without having to even pop open the mobile device and be able to do it from far away if you have someone else using it. But we can talk about Mac ID another time because we have a great conversation coming up with our guest on the podcast today. We have Brian Marakian, director of Populous Activate and principal at Populous. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast today, Brian.
Absolutely, Neil. I'm excited.
Well, really excited to talk to you about the way that Populous is really pioneering venue design and venue activation, in especially in the sports and entertainment space. But before we get into the meat of our discussion, Brian, give us a little idea of your career path and, you know, how you got involved in what you're doing, how you got interested in it, and any tips or learnings along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So I joined Populous about 10 years ago. It'll be 10 years, actually, in June. And, you know, the amazing thing is, you know, Kansas City is which is where we're located, which is where our North American headquarters is located, is kind of an epicenter of sports architecture. And so had an opportunity that came about a decade ago. Always knew that I loved sports architecture. I grew up an avid sports fan, played sports my entire life, and just loved everything about the experience. And so when the opportunity came about, I jumped at it. And I've had the chance to work on projects all over the United States and all over the world. We have an office in London, which a number of your listeners probably will be aware of, the London 2012 Olympic main stadium. We just did the Sochi Olympic main stadium. So our London office takes care of most of Europe and Russia, Africa. We also have an office in Brisbane, Australia. So we have some global reach, and it's been a really amazing journey along the way. I've been able to just be involved in a number of fantastic transformative projects that really shape communities and And for me, that's really the most exciting part of what I do. You know, every day is a new adventure, and being able to go in and work in these places where you know you can be a part of a generational building, and something that becomes a symbol for a city is something that has always, you know, that's what gets me up in the morning for sure. So it's that's been truly a blessing and just something that I find so much enjoyment in. And I would just say that you know, if there were some lessons along the way, you know, as I've gone through my career path, just always keeping an entrepreneurial spirit about you know what you want to do, and you know no goal is too lofty. You know, I think that you know, just through sort of the process of innovation and through the spirit of every day, kind of, you know, trying to accomplish you know, solutions, innovative solutions through new ideas. You know, I know that's what our practice is built on, and that's something that's I've held on to as I've gone through my career.
Yeah, it sounds like you really found a place where you're getting a lot of great experience there working for an internationally renowned company. But take us back a little bit real quick. Where did you go to school? What did you study? And was there a moment when you said, I want to do architecture? I want to do architecture in this esoteric space of sports and entertainment?
Yep. So I went to Kansas State University, which is has a tremendous architecture program. You know, every year, you know, if you look at the rankings, it's right up there with some of the best in the country. And so I was lucky because it was sort of in my backyard. And so I took the opportunity, got accepted to architecture school, went through, graduated. And as I went along, I actually had a really strong affinity towards branding and graphic design, and always was tremendously you know, excited about the possibilities in technology as well. And so when I got out into the industry, my initial career path was actually in graphic design. And you know, I learned a tremendous amount just from the branding side of design, and you know, working in that sort of sector of the industry, you know, I was able to, you know, learn a lot just about different ways in terms of, you know, consumer engagement and the way in which you tell a story through branding, and then I decided that I wanted to then you know, apply, you know, a little bit more of what I specifically learned in architecture school and began to practice architecture. And then the ultimate kind of fantastic opportunity arose at Populous, like I said, you know, about 10 years ago, where I was able to come in and really focus on both worlds. And that's where the opportunity to lead a specialized sector of our practice called Populous Activate came about. And what we do we've created a fantastic sort of hybridized group that focuses on fan experience and engagement and new technology platforms and is really responsible for a lot of the research and innovation in our practice. And what we do is, I would say that it in many ways mirrors like the process of IDEO, in the sense that we bring a lot of unique specialized backgrounds to the table when we solve problems. So we have graphic designers, we have people that specialize in prints, we have people that specialize in product design, we have visualization experts, we have people that are branding experts, we have architects, people with interior design backgrounds, and so we're able to really tackle a number of these specialized projects, you know, in the experiential world and in the retail hospitality world, and it really makes a more powerful, you know, visitor experience in our projects. And I've been fortunate to lead that group for the last half a decade, I guess. And there's just a tremendous amount of excitement in the future.
So Brian, it really sounds like Populous more than just an architecture firm with a specialty in sports and hospitality and entertainment. It really is a whole solution, and you really lead that side of it that helps a team or an organization really activate their brand throughout a venue. So what is Populous, I guess, in a nutshell? What is the pitch to, and who are you working with?
Well, you know, it's exciting because we have a really diverse fun, you know, when you start a project, to be able to go into a room and ask your client, you know, what are they team or a Major League Baseball franchise or you know, an arena project or a training facility or a minor league ballpark. You know, every one of these projects that we take on has a very unique story and a unique brand and a unique culture, and they reside in unique places, and there's a fabric around these projects that's really rich and amazing. And the thing that I love the most, I think, is when we have these initial conversations and we start to uncover what that is. You know, just that process of discovery and those conversations where we're able to listen to our clients and hear what their aspirations are is amazing, because it takes years for these projects to come about in many instances. And it's always fun for me when I look back and I look back at some of my initial notes or I think back to those conversations that we had, to see where you start and to the point of where you walk through those doors in sometimes a 75 or 8,000 seat, you know, stadium, and you have gone through this path that all culminates in this building. It's truly amazing. But in terms of our practice, we're really evolving, and that's the really sort of exciting moment that I think we've reached at this point. You know, the buildings themselves are so complex, and the audience that they're catering to is really diversified, and it's changing really, really rapidly. Mm-hmm. And we've gone from a situation where you're creating a stadium that's all about the in-seat experience to a number of really dynamic things connected to the entertainment and hospitality industries, things that are connected to technologies, things that really extend the experience in the building well outside the boundaries of the building. And what that has done is really reshaped the way that we think about design in a lot of ways. But it's also, to me, it's this incredible convergence that's happening right now. Is the point where I think that the biggest opportunity exists, and really it's really fantastic time to be part of our practice.
So is the Populous team coming in very early in the process, before a venue is even built and working there, or are you guys even now just as much retrofitting a little bit and helping an organization take advantage of their venue as it is?
Well, we do a combination of both, and you know, for a new project, it really is incredible when you see the sort of lineage of events that lead up to actually breaking ground for a new project. There's so many forces that are at play that ultimately leads to, you know, to a project ever happening. I mean, especially when you're talking about, you know, like a building for a professional franchise, when you imagine, you know, all of the significant pieces have to fall in place from a financing standpoint, and a land acquisition standpoint, and from a political standpoint, you know, that can take years, even a decade, you know, to lead up to that point. And we're part of that process along the way. We're working with our clients and our potential clients along the way, but there are many instances where we are brought in to help extend the life cycle of an existing building, even ones that might not have done originally. We have clients all the time that will reach out to us and say, you know, we're in a venue that's been in existence for 20 years. We really want to continue for this. We want this building to have a continued viability. Let's look at some ways that we can reactivate it, and so we take on a number of renovation type projects as well. So it's really a good mix.
Just to bounce back real quickly, before Populous came about, was there really a firm like Populous trying to do, and for lack of a better term, all of the above, design the building, design in a way that allows for activation and to cater to fans, and then help put everything into place, get those activations in place, get the branding out there and the graphics in place? Or was it really a lot more piecemeal before something like Populous came along?
Well, I think that you know, our firm has been in existence for 30 years, and you know, I'm happy to say and proud of the fact that we were really pioneers in the industry. And so, you know, what we have always tried to do is seen consumer patterns change, and we've seen that the leagues evolve, and we've seen, you know, the needs of our clients evolve over time. We have evolved, and the way that we design buildings, sports venues, particularly, you know, it's a lot different, frankly, than where we were 30 years ago. And the way that we have shifted our practice to be able to account for that, and brought in specializations and new segments of our practice to account for that, has been something that we certainly have led the industry in.
So tell me now, then, how does the just the actual practice of designing for an organization change? I mean, especially now in the 21st century, where you might have a building designed and then in 2 or 3 years it seems outdated. I mean, are you guys now having to anticipate changes or make buildings so versatile that they can incorporate changes along the way?
That's a great question, and it's one that our clients ask us repeatedly. You know, how do you future-proof our building, and how do you future-proof our building so that 20 and 30 years from now it's going to be as viable as it is today? And I wish there was a great answer for that, but the way that we have always approached it is that we try to stay on the forefront of innovation, and you know that technology is going to change. It's going to rapidly change, and the moment that you institute for instance, a cutting edge technology system, it may, in some respects, be outdated at the time that the building opens. And so, what you have to do, and what we've always tried to do, is something that we've placed a lot more emphasis on. When you look at the robust platforms that are in these venues today, in terms of, you know, when you look at Wi-Fi and DAS and, you know, a number of technological systems, just in that area alone, is just creating a pipeline, you know, creating the conduit so that over time you can evolve and adapt. And also, you know, the one thing to keep in mind is, you know, these are you know, they're big buildings. There's a ton of amenities that day one will open your building with. And there's a period where there's just a test of the market. And many times we will we'll watch how the building performs. Obviously, our clients are watching how the building is performing. They're seeing how they're seeing the financial return. And within the first 5-7 years, it's not uncommon at all that we will go back and have a series of day two projects that will allow us to go in and reshape a number of premium amenities, for instance, that will respond better to the marketplace. But these they're living buildings, and they're constantly evolving. They're constantly changing with the market and with different consumer demands. And what you have to do, and what we've learned, is that you just have to create an adaptive platform, so that over time you can allow that evolution to take place.
Very interesting, very insightful. Very interesting to hear how you can really create that adaptive capability even in the static building itself, which obviously has some structures that are hard to change on the fly.
Absolutely.
I was also going to ask, then, when you guys do first go into a new project or even a day two type project, what are the kinds of things that you guys are trying to accomplish for an organization? I mean, you talked about being future proof, being able to integrate their technologies, being able to integrate their brand. Are organizations tend to be more focused on, we want to create as many sponsorable assets and monetizing opportunities and make sure there's merchandise stands, concession stands, lots of signage, digital signage, or is it more focusing on, you know, where are the best sight lines for fans? Are there engagement areas for fans? You know, how is this going to affect our ability to connect with fans via mobile? I mean, where is sort of the spectrum seem to lie right now?
Well, I think it's everything that you just mentioned, and probably a little bit more. The reality is every one of our clients has different aspirations for what they want to achieve in venue. But you know, you probably rattle off about 25 things right there, and the reality is that it needs to do all of those things, and that's where I think the challenge lies for a practice like ours is you know, fundamentally to create an amazing day of game experience, and something that really first and foremost is going to create something memorable and powerful for the fans to visit these buildings, and to generate revenue, and do it in a very efficient way for our clients. And that's, as a baseline, that's how we test our innovation. But it's ultimately what we strive to deliver to our clients as well. And you know, it's important for these buildings to have a fantastic, you know, in-seat experience. The sight lines, as you mentioned, is critical. But it's all the other, and this is especially true today. It's all the other peripheral elements that are becoming more and more essential. And when we think about designing a building, we're not just thinking about designing the building itself. We're thinking about designing experience that really starts at the point in time when you purchase your ticket, right? And the point that you purchase your ticket, you leave your home on a game day. You arrive at the parking lot. We want to design that experience. We want to design the experience for the 2 or 3 hours leading up to the game. And we work with sponsor partners to activate areas that are around the perimeter of a building. To the point that you pass through the gate, on the concourses, the sponsor activation components that are kind of in these circulation areas, the concessions, the restrooms, everything, you know, that fans will experience, and then certainly in seat as well, and the technology platform that goes into it. So it is a it really is a comprehensive design motive. You know, we think of these buildings as thousands of moments of connected experiences, and we try to design something really powerful at every point of engagement. And so when you break that down, there's so many pieces that are part of the equation. But the best buildings are the ones that really take that all into consideration.
Oh, certainly. And it certainly does help Populous stand apart from any other architectural firm, is that you guys have the experience, you guys have these thought patterns that anticipate, you know, what the fan experience will be like, and aren't just solely focused on having a building that stands up on its own.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and I think that you know, one of the things that was a premise of a major premise of my talk in South by Southwest was just the really amazing shift in fan patterns and what we have observed as we look at the next generation of fans and the sort of things that they want that in many ways is very much different than you know, certain prior generations leading up to this point in time. And when you look at for instance, like millennial fans, and when I look at my son, you know, who's 6 years old, who's gonna be, you know, part of the next generation that will follow millennials, and the things that he enjoys and the way that he interacts with things like technology, and this sort of, when I imagine, you know, what the NFL you know, television experience is going to be like in 20 or so years, and when I look at things like virtual reality, and when I look at you know a whole myriad of different, you know, forces from a media standpoint that may keep people away from these types of venues, you know, it really lends itself towards a new challenge for us in terms of how do you create something more powerful in venue for the next generation of fans. But it's also very exciting, and I think that you know, the best buildings that will be part of the future generation of buildings will really accomplish both things. They'll capture a really exciting place for people to gather, but they'll also have they'll be very technologically advanced, and they will tap into the psyche of the needs of the next generation of consumers and fans for sure.
Oh, that's really insightful, really interesting stuff. Is that kind of where everyone is trying to get right now, is having that happy medium of enough tech but not too much, where you're taking away from really what brought people out to the games in the first place, that emotional tie, that feeling, that experience?
Yeah, I think you really hit on it, and that's the important thing, is that people are people are social, you know, and people want to be together. And there's something so powerful about, you know, 65 or 70,000 people that can come together for a sporting event and to share that common experience together. And that's what these buildings do. And that's what is to me the most powerful part of what we create is that social experience where people can come and physically be together to share it. And so we always want to have that, and there will always be a draw. You know, it's embedded in people's DNA. You know, you can have something that's extremely powerful sitting on your couch in a lot of ways, and there are things that are fantastic and exciting about things like fantasy football and all these other great things. But what you can't replace is that sort of palpable emotional experience of being in a venue together with 70,000 people. And I think that that's essential first and foremost. But I do think that, you know, from a technological side, one of the things that we know absolutely to be true is people want to be able to have, you know, the basics. And when you go into a building that you know, you can't even make a phone call, you know, or a text message, much less, you know, stream, you know, a video. You know, you've got to be able to solve that first and foremost. And so I think this is where a lot of advances are going to be made in the next few years as we get our arms around, you know, basically, you know, enhancing the essential infrastructure to do those sort of basic things. And then I think what's going to happen beyond that is you're just going to see so many tremendous new opportunities for fans to, one, engage in venue through technology, to extend the conversation out of venue, which is what our clients are very interested and excited about. Advertisers are certainly very excited about that as well. And then when you just imagine, you know, how that's going to continue to evolve, I think that, you know, the sky's really the limit. But you know, as you look at some of the venues now today that have these interwoven systems, that have things like, you know, navigational wayfinding things. When you look at like MLB at the ballpark app, you know, using iBeacon, when you're looking at some of these other systems that, you know, allow you to get from point A to point B, to find the club space that you're looking for, to go to, you know, to understand, you know, what restroom has the shortest line, to be able to, you know, purchase a customized jersey and have it delivered to your seat, to be able to have access to different sort of camera vantage points from around the venue, or to see into a locker room, you know, before the team takes the field. These sort of things really powerfully augment the experience, and not only just give you the basics, but they're the essential things that people demand now, and that's what we have to design around. And I think that's really the amazing opportunity that lies in front of us.
Definitely. I mean, you guys really are enhancing the fan. It really is about what more can you add to the fan experience beyond just the basics even. But Brian, one thing I wanted to get into as well is that one thing Populous does really well, and really partially of how we connected today, again, talking to Brian Merakian, director of Populous Activate and principal at Populous, is that Populous does a real good job with thought leadership and really helping to show their clients and potential clients that you guys understand the fan experience and are keeping track of how it's changing day to day. So when it comes to really then working with clients to activate and help them maximize their ROI on everything in their buildings, are they coming to you and saying, hey, we know you guys are capable of so many things X, Y, and Z, help us figure out what tech is the right tech to do, what experiences are worth doing, and what are just sort of more novelties? Or are they coming to you and saying, we know we want to do X, Y, and Z? Who's sort of driving the way? I mean, and who's identifying what the fan experience should evolve toward?
Sure. It's a very good question. I think that what we're finding now is that these organizations that we work with are becoming more and more savvy, and they are, you know, testing, you know, they're researching the market, they're seeing what's happening, you know, within peer stadiums, and you know, these leagues, for instance, you know, leagues like the NFL, Major League Baseball, and you know, the NBA, they have specialized groups within those organizations that are also helping steer the way for a number of our clients. So it's an evolving sort of world right now, and there's a lot of opportunity that sort of exists around that. What we try to do is create a good roadmap. We try to educate our clients in terms of these are the opportunities, these are the sort of things that are happening in the world, and then we connect pieces together. You know, that's really kind of what I think we do well is we connect the right sort of partnership alignments together, and we help our clients get from point A to point B. Just speaking about what we have under our roof, we're not a technology solutions provider, but we right. work with a lot of technology solutions providers, and so it's really about our responsibility of understanding what our clients want, what the needs are, what their fans are telling them that they want, digesting that information, and then conceptually saying this is what could be the right fit. And these are the types of people that we should be aligning with to make it happen. That's typically how it works.
So are you guys going in there and really, I mean, for lack of a better term, knocking down silos? Or are a lot of these conversations already happening internally? Is the CTO and the CMO in the same room with the corporate partnerships VP? Or are you really coming in necessitating those conversations that really haven't been had before and connecting all those dots?
Every situation is a little bit different, but I think that some of the best and most fruitful conversations are when you can get everybody around the table, like you just suggested, and that's when we can have the stakeholders at the top level of these ownership groups that we're working with that are part of that and active and driving that sort of initiative on their side, and when we are at the table talking about the creative solution and the way in which the fan engagement could exist in new and different ways, as well as having the pragmatic element of the solutions provider at the table as well to say, that there is a possibility and it could work, and it could work in this way, and you could drive revenue in this way. When all of those parties are collaboratively thinking about the problem and working through it together, that's really in my experience has been the most beneficial outcome.
So it really is about recognizing the importance and acknowledging the importance of the building, of the venue, and how it can be a revenue stream, how it is integral to the fan experience and ultimately winning fans long term. And it sounds like Populous has really found the center of all those things coming together.
Yeah, it really is. It is a central part of the conversation. Like I was alluding to before, what we're trying to ultimately design is the entire experience that extends well outside the boundaries of the building itself. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the way in which new technology platforms can do that, and the way in which the fan experience is really a 365 scenario, and the way in which you can build fan culture through technology streams and social streams, and the way in which that then interweaves with the stadium architecture itself, it's an extremely valuable proposition for our clients when they think of not only the building as a place to physically gather their fans for game day, but also think of it as sort of the epicenter of all of this peripheral activity that occurs.
And from a
revenue standpoint, it's really central to that equation.
And then lastly, Brian, before we get this episode's shareable stat, if I were to come to you today, and let's just say we're in the United States, and I know every sport might differ a little bit, but if I were to come to you today and say, let's design a building for a major pro sports team in a major metropolis, what are the kind of things that you imagine are going to be necessary for over the next few years, over the next decade? Are we going to get to a point where there's 65,000 different fan experiences for that single game to make it that uber personalized? Or where do you see it going in the next handful of years here?
Well, you know, in the next few years, I think that yes, you are going to see a lot of the consumer tendencies of millennials start to take shape. Really, within the next 5 to 7 years, you're going to see millennials, for instance, that are entering, you know, their peak earning years. And so the way in which we design premium amenities is going to be very different, and it is going to be personalized. It's going to be highly, you know, customized. You know, this next generation of fans and consumers wants to be part of the experience. They want to be actively, you know, part of whatever experience they're going to have in venue, and you know, they want fun. They want adventure. They want to be able to freely choose, you know, the different areas that they can experience in a venue. And I think that that's really going to shape in a lot of different ways the way that we imagine the venue of the future. I think you're going to see fewer physical seats and more social spaces and more places for brands to activate, more places for fans to socially gather together. You're going to see some very exciting advances in technology. And I think that's all going to shape a very different in-venue experience. I also think, looking a little bit broader, from a broader perspective, cities are becoming more and more urbanized, and you know, there are a number of forces that are taking shape in terms of, you know, mass transit and just tighter sites and things that need to be taken into account in terms of designing the buildings. So when you're looking at 20 or 30 years from now, you know, the way in which ballparks and stadiums and arenas are going to be embedded into the urban fabric, and the way in which they're going to be very much more activated at all times and embedded into the fabric of a city. I think that's really exciting, and I also think it's going to pose a lot of challenges as well. But that's where we're evolving to, and I think that you know, what you're going to see just in the next few years is going to be the start of that. You know, we're doing a ballpark in Atlanta that's part of a large mixed-use entertainment district, an arena in Las Vegas that's right off the Strip and part of an entertainment and entertainment sort of hospitality retail district as well. I think this is really the next generation of these buildings is a place that's activated 365 and where fans can come to all throughout the year. So these are some of the things that are definitely on the forefront of our design consideration.
Ah, very well put, and a great way to cap our discussion. I mean, it really is about a future in which the venue is about more than just hosting a sports game. It's about being part of the community and being tied in, like you said, activated 365, and a future where a ticket to a game is more than about just admission to a game. It's about that experience of going to the game and experience it overall, and it's really cool to hear Populous's insights about that. But, Brian, we could talk to you about some of your buildings all day. I have so many more questions I'd love to ask you, but we'll have a little more fun with you in our Babble with Brian segment. And first, we'll be right back with this episode's Shareable Stat. Really awesome discussion with Brian Merakian, director of Populous Activate and principal at Populous. Just could pick his brain all day about different venue activations out there and some of the best practices and what Populous is doing to make sure that they're keeping up with all their clients and all the fans that they serve. But we'll have a little fun coming up in our quick hitting questions segment with Brian Merakian just ahead. But first, this episode's Shareable Stat. This episode's Shareable Stat comes from the Perkins Miller Agency, which is one of the agencies of record that works with the NFL. And they were speaking at the recent South by Southwest sports track, and it came out that 80% of NFL fans have their mobile devices in their hand while they're watching NFL games. 80%. Now, that is astounding. That goes well beyond the 41 million or so fantasy players in the United States. It goes well beyond the millennials that we think are the only ones you have to worry about when it comes to a mobile play. It really is a huge contingent of fans. 80% of the NFL fan base, which spans the demos, spans the male and female genders, spans generations, and so it really is a lot of users using their mobile devices while watching games. The question is, what are they all doing? Obviously, social media plays a big part of it, especially for the younger crowd, with a lot of photos and videos. Communication is obviously key as well. A lot of people are sending pictures, sending text messages, posting to Facebook, doing a little FOMO to their friends and family. And of course, there is the fantasy element and gaming element as well, as some users are just passing the time and are keeping up with their fantasy games and anything else they might have money on, including gambling, of course, in the NFL world. So what does it mean for sports marketers? It means you need to worry about what your fan base is doing on their mobile devices while they're consuming your games. Every fan base will be a little bit different, but of course, you can follow some of the macro trends, but really at the end of the day, it's about finding out from your fans. It can be done through observation. You know, look at the crowd. What are they doing? Ask people. Ask fans. Do some surveys. Ask your season ticket holders. Ask your friends and family what they do during games while they're at home, at a bar, or at games in person at the venue. Fact is, mobile devices are becoming a bigger and bigger part of the fan experience, no matter what age you are, whether you play fantasy or not, and no matter what line of work you do or what social demographic profile fits you. It's now on teams to figure out how they can use that mobile device to really enhance the fan experience and not disrupt what they already want to be doing. Alright guys, that's this episode's shareable stat. Definitely one to ponder. It's 80% of NFL fans have their mobile device in hand while watching NFL games. Simply stunning. Alright, we'll be right back to have a little fun with Brian Merakian and get to know him a little bit. Coming right at ya. Welcome back. That was this episode's shareable stat, and it's all about how NFL fans in particular are tied to their mobile devices, and 80% of NFL fans have their mobile device in their hand while they're watching games. Let's see what our guest thinks about that. We have Brian Merakian, director of Populous Activate and principal at Populous. Brian, 80% of NFL fans have their mobile devices in their hand while they're watching NFL games. Does that number sound about right to you, or even higher, lower?
You know, I heard that stat at South by Southwest from an NFL executive, and it does not surprise me. It's actually something that we have given a lot of consideration around. And you know, when you look at the proliferation of fantasy football, there's estimates of 40 plus million people on a weekly basis that are engaged in fantasy football. When you look at things like the way in which Red Zone, for instance, has completely transformed the way fans watch the NFL, but just sports in general. When you just imagine just the effect of sort of the second screen phenomenon, and the way in which fans are constantly wanting to be tapped into a broader conversation, texting, tweeting, seeing what's happening around the league as they're watching their own team, or they're watching you know, any sort of broadcast through the NFL. No, that doesn't surprise me at all. And I think that it's something that is very important to think about as you're designing a venue of the future from our standpoint, because the NFL has done a really great job of not only leveraging fan culture and you know and the fact that through their media broadcast and through all the mobile platforms that they have developed. I mean, they've created essentially the most popular league in the world. When you do that, and you can also create an in-venue experience that's just as powerful, I think you've really got something.
Definitely, it's not just a mobile phone in their hand; it's a mobile experience enhancement tool.
Look at it, yeah.
All right, Brian, you survived your interview today. Are you now ready to have a little fun in our Babble with Brian segment?
Absolutely.
All right, number one for you, Brian: the most memorable venue for which you worked on the design.
You know, this is a hard question to answer, because I've had the opportunity to work on a number of venues, you know, luckily all over the world, and it's kind of like picking your favorite child.
Oh, I bet.
I would say this is actually a recent project, but the new Las Vegas Arena to me is one of the most memorable venues, just because you know, how do you design an entertainment venue in the city of entertainment? And and so that to me has been one of the most memorable experiences for sure.
Oh, I like that. Right? In one word, Brian, which sports can have a pro team in Las Vegas first, hockey or basketball?
I don't know if I can answer that. I can speculate. I don't even know if I want to speculate.
We know they'll have a great arena waiting for them, hopefully, when that day comes.
That's right. That's right.
All right, Brian, how about your favorite piece of historical architecture? It can be sports or non-sports. It can be anywhere in the world. Your favorite piece of historical architecture.
Okay, so I was able to study abroad in Italy when I was in architecture school and traveled all over Italy. And I would have to say my favorite piece of historical architecture is the Pantheon in Rome, which is an amazing building that was actually constructed. Initial construction was about 100 years BC. But it's amazing. It has if you've ever seen the building, there's an oculus in the ceiling and the light streams through it. And it, to me, that's when I stood inside that space the first time, I instantly thought that was my favorite building I'd ever been in.
Oh, I love it. But the question is, how was the Wi-Fi there?
Pretty primitive.
The Romans had most stuff figured out, but not quite Wi-Fi.
Exactly. All right.
Number three for you, Brian, and this could be a tough question. The most challenging sport to design a building for, and why?
Okay, so most challenging sport is a difficult one. I guess what I'd like to do is flip that one a little bit and say, you know, one of the most challenging building types in the world that we exist in, sports architecture is an arena, actually, because it has to host so many different sports and so many different events and so many different things like concerts and Disney on Ice or an NBA game or an NHL game, and being able to sort of create the environment that's flexible and can adapt for all those different types of events. That would be